$3 per month per eye.
You know your costs up front with no hidden charges.
You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Kambati himself at each visit.
The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, you know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Kambati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877-U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rib tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present
Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City Code 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Oh my God.
Maui Time 2K5.
The Rift tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser.
Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5.
101 WRIF.
Yes.
Chance to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Wrist All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9
on 101 WRIF,
Detroit's rock station.
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 Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well,
and
you're
I don't
just
wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, You can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't
never.
Just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans,
and
boots.
I don't do that.
No?
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all of
them. He sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas up your ass. Ha, ha,
stop it. Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
And now, The Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff.
Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Well, welcome, everybody. We got on a little late. My boss, my gold belt,
Doug Podell, doing some great local music here. But we're here, and music from you too. Pride in the Name of Love, their tribute to Martin Luther King Jr. And right before our interviews at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, we will play the entire tune for you. And a wonderful holiday to a man so important in American history with his message of, people usually think of nonviolence, but of justice, of peace and social justice. And remember, when he was assassinated, it wasn't even directly a civil rights struggle in Memphis, but rather supporting a labor struggle. So Martin Luther King Jr., do something tomorrow to honor his memory. I'll tell you what I'm going to do and what's happening, at least in the Detroit area. If you have other events happening around the country, be sure to call us, because I know people are listening all across the country, all across the world, at WRIF.com, at RadioPower.org. Remember as well that RadioPower.org repeats the show twice on Monday, and then it's archived by WhiteRoseSociety.org as well. So I might as well give you all the details right now. It occurs to me, I do the show sequentially, right, because I'm here for 2 hours, and then I play an hour of recorded interviews. But some of you, you may just hear it like for the first 10 minutes, or you may only hear it for between 11:30 and 10 to 12 when you're driving home, so some people might miss all of this. Anyway, our number is 313-298-WRIF. Invite you to join us on the air here, this time set aside by WRIF in Detroit for us to express our opinions. If you want to email me, I don't even have that up. Still, we're in this brand new studio with all these screens, and they're still getting the best of me. Anyways, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My personal website is peterwerbe.com. 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 And if you want to join a chat room while this program is going on, you can go to TomHartman.com. Tom is a syndicated radio talk show host, unfortunately not heard in Detroit, and yet he's kind enough, generous enough to allow us to piggyback on his website chat room. And I said last week, he said we could rename it for during these 2 hours, PeterWerbe.com. But I want you to know about Tom. It's TomHartman. But if you spell it any other way, you'll get there as well. And then you got to go through a couple of hoops to get into the chat room, but it ain't that hard. So please join us on any of the subjects you hear me talking about. And usually that's what, I mean, I suppose that's what talk shows do. Although, yeah, this isn't an ordinary talk show by any means, is it? But usually talk show, the host says, blah, 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 and do you think that, you know, whatever. But you can, and we've done this sometimes in the past. If you call 313-298-WRIF, you can set the question or the subject for the evening as well. Now, what's the big deal? Several of them, at least in my opinion. Well, I don't know. How can you even sort out what's going on? I read the New York Times every morning. And my wife always comes down from our bedroom a little after I do, and she says, what's the news? And I said, same bad news, different countries. I mean, there's good news, and good things happen to people all around the world. They happen to us. But the dramatic, I guess why we focus so much on the negative, is there are so many bad things happening to so many people under so many circumstances that are preventable. Even, you say, well, not the tsunami, you know, stuff like that, or not the mudslide, or not the avalanche that happened out in Utah. But there's even aspects, particularly the tsunami, that quite a loss of life could have been prevented. But I don't want to get too far afield. All right, so what is presenting itself to us? Here is the front page of a right-wing website, which I won't even honor them by, there's so many of them out there. You don't need me to publicize them. Anyway, it says, torturer in chief convicted. Now, they're not talking about Bush. Torturer in chief convicted. Of course, they're talking about Army Specialist Charles Grainer Jr., who was the ringleader of what the Yahoo News calls a band of rogue guards at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, and he was convicted Friday of abusing Iraqi detainees in a case that sparked international outrage. And well, that it should. Now, there's a lot of different ways to get at this. I mean, one of the interesting things of this, of course, is what leads a human being to do that as to another human being. I mean, we know the beastly and despicable violence and harm and torture and rape that people have done to others. And to most of us, fortunately, to most of us, we think, how could anybody do that to anyone else? I mean, that's kind of the question, because we couldn't do that. We couldn't do what Grainer did. Most of us, some of you are saying, I could. And you're the people that scare me, of course. I don't mean you frighten me, but you scare me because I know you're among us. Now, the deal is that there's people like Charles Grainer everywhere in the world, in every country in the world, in every society in the world, bar none, bar absolutely none. And here's the question, though. When do the Charles Grainers of the world get to practice their, I don't even know how to describe it, their hatred, their rage, their innate cruelty? Because I couldn't do what he did. Remember, he was a prison guard. A lot of the stuff, the beatings, tortures, humiliations, that goes on regularly in American prisons. At one point, Bush said that that this was completely un-American, what happened at Abu Ghraib. And then you can do this. Go to one of these search engines if you use the internet and type in American prison abuse. And you know, you can spend the next 17 days looking at all the websites that chronicles the horrible tortures that go on regularly in American prisons. And not the opinions of people, not the report of prisoners, but the results of lawsuits, of state commissions, of the testimony of guards and wardens and what have you. In fact, two of the Department of Correction heads, and I can't remember the states. Maybe some of you can remember this. If you do, give me a call. 313-298-WRIF. They were two guys in two separate states that were head of prisons or prison systems, I believe, in the state that got lawsuits filed for permitting all sorts of illegal and unconstitutional activity to occur in their prisons in terms of brutality by guards against prisoners. And the two of these guys, and this is back in my memory a few months ago, about 6 months ago, they got fired from their jobs. Well, hey, that's some progress. So where do they wind up? Well, where most political losers wind up, in the Bush administration. Remember that? You know, Ashcroft lost the race in Missouri to a dead man. And, gee, that's nice. I can't even think of the senator from Michigan that lost to Debbie Stabenow. Spencer Abrams. Right. You know, he wound up as Secretary of Energy. But the torture-in-chief, well, all right, I'm going way too far afield. We'll get to the torture in chief. But if you're just joining us, we're talking about the conviction of Charles Grainer, the ringleader of a band of rogue guards. In other words, they were acting outside the rules. Is the idea here? And Grainer was the ringleader. Well, we found out, of course, and Grainer was just following orders. Certainly, he was told to soften him up, and this was policy. Now, this gets not to the where I was going, but this will do. This goes right up to Rumsfeld, who okayed this stuff. This goes right to Alberto Gonzalez, who has been nominated by Bush to replace the awful Ashcroft, that they okayed torture. That the rules, that the international rules regarding treatment of prisoners did not apply. The Geneva Convention's quaint, is what Gonzalez called them. I'll have play an interview for you about that at 1 a.m. Here's probably the most understated headline of the week. Higher officials unlikely to be tried in torture case. Yeah, well, I guess not. And the biggest nerve or whatever, six members of the elite Navy force are suing a news agency over photos. Six members of the Navy SEALs and two of their wives have sued the Associated Press, for distributing photos of the SEALs that show them treating Iraqi prisoners harshly. In other words, they were caught. They weren't even hiding this because it was so commonplace. We're already, we got to torture people a little, get them to understand American democracy like in our prisons. I guess it's the logic there. But the AP published these photos of these Navy SEALs torturing prisoners. And so the Navy guys are suing Associated Press. I mean, it's that bad. The outgoing head of the U.S. Department of Fatherland Security, Tom Ridge, said U.S. should not rule out torture. The U.S. should not rule out torture. You should be able to use it in some cases. What would be our feeling if that was being said, for instance, by some other power, like, say, by the Iraqi insurgents, they said, if we capture Americans, we will not rule out torture. In fact, what would be our reaction if about six or seven American soldiers, our neighbors, our community members, member of the United States Armed Forces, were captured, tied up, had bags put over their heads, and then have some of the things that American soldiers did to Iraqis and Afghans and other people that they've captured? We would be outraged beyond belief. And on one hand, we certainly would be justified. But why doesn't that apply equally to other combatants? Because, of course, these people that were getting tortured, they weren't all Al-Qaeda. In fact, 95, 98% of them weren't Al-Qaeda. All right, but let's get back to the Grainers of the world. He was just following orders. This was what he was supposed to do. Of course, he enjoyed it. He had a ball doing it. He likes to punch people. He likes to humiliate people. I saw at one point, I don't think it was even Grainer, but some of these torturers, U.S. torturers, American torturers, they said they had a contest to see how quickly they could make a prisoner piss his pants. This is great fun. This is what? This is why we're in Iraq. But at some level, the low, unless someone is doing so far off the charts that absolutely inconsistent with the mission that they're supposed to be carrying out, there's a responsibility to the higher officers and ultimately up the chain. So the real torturer in chief is George W. Bush, because he okayed all of this. His Secretary of War okayed all this, Donald Rumsfeld. His advisor told him it was okay, Alberto Gonzalez. But let's get back to the Grainers. If they told me, well, first off, I wouldn't be in a police squad to begin with. But that's not what I would choose. So Grainer is a prison guard. He's done the same kind of stuff he did in Iraq, in Pennsylvania prisons, I'm sure. And, you know, all of a sudden get to Iraq and say, oh, I'm going to start doing this to people. And but what is needed in a society is a couple of things. And the first thing is social permission. Social permission. It's got to be okay. Because, as I said earlier, there's Grainers in every society in the world. But unless society gives the approval, most people don't do it. Or if they are, they're thought to be the most awful people in that society. Like there was this Hamburg police unit that was sent into Poland to kill Jewish women and children. The men were sent to concentration camps, work camps. The women and the children were to be killed. And these police officers in this Hamburg police unit, there's a whole book about this, shot them all. And they asked people, many of them were alive in the 80s and all that, and they did interviews, and they said, why did you do something like this? And they all said, what do you think? We were instructed to do it. Or one guy said, I wanted a career in police work, and I didn't want to jeopardize my career. So they were given social permission. In fact, they were given orders to do it. And a lot of them said it made them sick. They didn't understand why that was being done. But, you know, it wasn't really their responsibility. But they were given social permission. Then the other thing is, and it's kind of connected to the first, is social affirmation. How is this looked upon? Is the torture and humiliation of prisoners looked upon as a beastly, brutal, cruel act? Or are there important elements in society that says, yes, this is okay, or maybe just a little slightly off that, this isn't so bad. This is not the worst thing that's being done. Now, the latter comes about by all these right-wing talk show hosts that have been apologizing up and down the board for the Grainers of the world, saying everything originally like, oh, it's like a prank. This is like a fraternity prank. Well, I mean, maybe that's what some of the frat rats do to each other, but I don't think it goes to that extreme. And, I mean, they do some pretty weird things, that's for sure. But you can just see the mentality that is promoted by these right-wing freaks that are on the air, and how they whip up their audience. Rather than telling their audience this is impermissible behavior within the human community of which Americans and Iraqis are all part of, even people that may have committed transgressions, well, that gives you social permission. That gives you social affirmation. So the cruelty, you know, whenever I hear these right-wing talk show hosts, when they laugh, it's always almost the torturer's laugh. Because when you read accounts like in Amnesty International, people being tortured, you would think these guys are going, and sometimes, you know, they do get mean, but often they're laughing. There's a lot of laughter in torture chambers, whether it's Saddam Hussein's torture chambers or whether it's an American torture chamber run by Army Specialist Charles Grainer Jr. So maybe he's going to do 10 years. Maybe someone will kick the crap out of him there. Maybe someone will pose with their fist right in front of his face, just the way he did with the Iraqi. And then as soon as the camera is off, they'll smash his face. Well, you know what? I hope that does not happen to them. Ultimately, though, what is the responsibility of the people that put this all into operation? The White House says the Iraq weapons search is over. How much does this all cost? It doesn't even say in this article. The Iraqi survey group had as many as 1,500 military and intelligence specialists and support staff. Can you imagine how much this cost? Maybe $20 million. And they said that their hunt for Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, a two-year search costing millions of dollars, has closed down without finding the stockpiles that Bush cited as the justification for overthrowing Saddam Hussein. What does he say now, Bush? Well, I'm so glad we did it. Sure. I mean, you know, the country's destroyed. It's on the verge of disintegrating. They're already, the United States has already, for all practical purposes, illegally invaded Iran. There's reconnaissance teams going in there. This was, you know, they want the region to be destabilized. All right, I want to talk about the coronation coming up soon, but let's take some calls first, if I can get my little cursor going here. I got to first find, there we are. Okay. A few buttons on my brand new board here, and I think we can do it. It's Ryan from Flat Rock. Ryan, hi, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good.
I've been listening to you since you started, man, and, I don't know, it's starting to really get to me how these guys are complaining how we're torturing them and this and that, and have we, you know, I don't recall ever hearing any of our soldiers cutting their hands off or beheading anybody or anything like that, did we?
So you think the behavior that Grainer was convicted of is okay?
Well, what exactly was he convicted of?
Well, all sorts of brutality, humiliation. I mean, you know, there's laws governing the treatment of prisoners, and those have been severely violated by the United States routinely in Afghanistan, at Guantanamo, and in Iraq. I mean, they're shameful. They make you ashamed to be an American instead of proud.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm not proud of that. It's just, you know, when I see a humanitarian aid worker, you know, getting beheaded on the internet, you know, that's...
You actually watched that?
I saw that.
Yeah, well, you should. It might be a good idea not to. Look, the deal is you cannot justify your own... You can't justify being brutal by setting the brutality of others. And secondly, if we never would have gone into there in the first place, none of this would have ever occurred. There wouldn't have been an aid worker, wouldn't have been beheaded, and Grainer would probably still just be a prison guard. All right, Ryan, thanks. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Some open lines for you. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, it's Steve from Rochester.
Hi, Steve.
It's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No.
They over there beheading us just like the guy in front of you said.
Well, wait a minute. But these are not people that beheaded anybody. These were ordinary Iraqis that wound up in the clutches of a Grainer and his pals. They didn't do anything.
I understand that, and that guy was wrong for what he'd done,
but
you know what? He did what he had to do. He felt the American way.
Well, brutalizing prisoners is the American way, huh?
In some way, yes. In some ways, not.
That's scary.
It is scary.
Well, no, it's scary that you hold that opinion, because what we've tried to do over the centuries is remove that capacity of people in positions of official power to do that to people. That's why, you know, you can't beat confessions out of people in the United States. That used to happen routinely. In fact, it happened. I mean, you know, it still happens sometimes. But the courts, even if somebody is, quote, obviously guilty, you know, that phrase, and the cops have beat a confession out of it, they'll throw the confession out and they'll throw the case out. Because they know if they allow that, that becomes the routine behavior of the way the police act towards everyone. And so you had the situation in Illinois that all during the 80s and the 90s, the cops were torturing confessions out of people and who would admit to murder. And then the governor had to free like 18 people from death row who were about to be executed and never done a damn thing.
And I understand that to the fullest. Could I say one thing?
Sure.
Thank President Bush.
For what? Making this country a disgrace throughout the world?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's the only time I'll thank him. Let's see here. It's Eric in Southgate. Eric's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hi. Eric, you with me, brother? Maybe I didn't do this. No, I didn't. I'm sorry, Eric. Here's Eric. Go ahead.
Hey, Pete. How's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for calling.
Well, I just wanted to say... I'm going to change my question here a little bit. I've been beaten up like six times by cops since I was 15. Why don't we change the problems we have with America here instead of going over in Iraq and changing our problems over there? You know, understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
I mean, it's unreal how cops just lie on the stand, on the police report, on petitions into the psych ward. And there's not a bit thing you can do about it. You got to have a lawyer now to even go to court. It's pitiful. If you go to court, it's Southgate, where I live, there's 10,000 people there. They just must be rolling in millions of dollars, and, you know, it's crime-free city.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just to get off this point for a little bit, is there anything we can do about these people with bright headlights? Do you know what I'm talking about? I cannot even drive it.
Well, from the big problems to the little ones, I've always wanted to get like those, talking about the police, the spotlights they have, and just turn them on, man, and just hit them like square in the...
Oh, well, there are people that come up to me. I've had that done, like just kids in cars and flash me, you know, and then I got to go chase them down and... You know, but yeah.
Wait. Well, if you're chasing people down, it sounds like you're asking for trouble.
That's after they spot me, you know.
Really?
In the eyes, and it pisses me off. I got no problems. I'm moving to Amsterdam, Pete.
You're going to with my friend John Sinclair.
Oh, I see him at the Hash Bash every year.
Yeah. By the way, you can hear him on the internet at johnsinclairradio.com.
Oh, he's a very wise man. And he's got very long tongues.
Yeah, he does. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Oh, let me see here. If you hear me bumbling around here, it's because I still haven't gotten all this technology down, but I'm getting there. By the way, I should have said this right from the beginning. If you're here in the Detroit area, and I said take part in some Martin Luther King Jr. Day commemoration. People tomorrow, and I'm going to be down here for some of it, Detroit Martin Luther King Day is going to have a march and a rally. So people are going to gather at noon at Central United Methodist Church, which is next to Comerica Park. That's our ballpark, if you're listening somewhere outside of Detroit. The Tigers had this wonderful old stadium and put in this new modern saucer, which I have never been to a game at. Swore I wouldn't. Probably I'll have to one of these days. But any event, and it's owned by Comerica, so they get to name it. And I think in the seventh inning, someone told me they stand up and they sing "God Bless Comerica." Is that true? I don't know. If it is, call me. Doesn't sound true. So if it's not, don't bother to tell me. 313-298-WRIF. Anyways, there's going to be a send-off rally at Central Methodist Church, and then 1 to 2 o'clock there's going to be a march to Hart Plaza with short stops at the Labor Legacy Monument. If you haven't seen that in Hart Plaza, that's a tremendous piece of sculpture, enormous piece, by the way, I think about 60 feet tall. And there's also a riverfront statue commemorating the Underground Railroad. Detroit was part of what took escaping slaves from the South before the Civil War and sent them over to Canada. If you don't want to go on the march, it's going to be pretty cold tomorrow. There's going to be a video showing at the church during the march of Martin Luther King's speech opposing the Vietnam War at Riverside Church. I've read this. It's so extraordinarily powerful. I think I'm going to stay and watch it. Anyways, things go on till 4 o'clock with an indoor rally and stuff like that. So if you're in Detroit, a good way to commemorate the memory of Dr. King and the fact that one of the few holidays that in America, or maybe the only one, that actually celebrates somebody that stood for peace and social justice and nothing else. Wasn't a politician, didn't lead a war or anything like that. This is a wonderful day, I think. All right. Peter Werbe here with you on Night Call, and our number 313-298-WRIF. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com is our phone number. And let's see. Here's our next caller. It's James calling from New Hudson, Michigan. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, man? I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm an anthropology major. In a long time making of that. But, you know, I'm very keen to observations about, you know, just like micro and, you know, like macro situations. You know, like if you really think about it, the way that, you know, the prison guards act are the same way the bully acts inside, you know, the playground and everything like that.
Sure.
And it's the same way, you know, like...
And it's the same guy. It's not like they got transformed overnight. The personality has already been formed, but it's whether society's going to let him do that or not.
Right. It's like society is a big toy box with a different size, you know, holes in it. Triangle holes, round holes, square holes. Certain people are going to go into certain holes. You know, always the same type of person becomes a cop. You know, they almost look the same. You know, same type of person, like, you know, not all the time, but, you know, some people make a mistake and maybe join the military. But, you know, it's like you could almost demographically fit it into a type of character. And it seems to me that, you know, like if President Bush was, you know, on the playground when someone's getting beat up and he's there in power with the person who's doing the beating up, that they're going to sit there and laugh together. And I did like your comment about, you know, if Americans were caught, say, by Iraqis, you know, and they were doing what we are doing to them in the prison, you know, would we be upset? I think the real question is if we were caught by, say, Canada or a country that we don't, you know, we're not taught to hate or mm-hmm. a culture that we're not taught to hate, you know, and they start doing it to us for no reason, just because they thought that we were spying on them and wanted to get information, and then they were doing all these things, you know, then I think that we'd really be upset, you know, and some people are just upset, you know, at our back for different reasons. And also, one of the things, too, the one caller called and he said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that actually is a, I'm sure that you probably know, but, you know, that rule came out of Mesopotamia.
Out of Iraq, yeah. But also, there's another phrase too, an eye, something, I have an eye, and everybody winds up blind or something like that. All right, thank you so much, James. I appreciate your call. Thanks for joining us. Oh yeah, I got an announcement. I've been announcing my website, peterwerbe.com, peterwerbe.com. I think it's going to be down if I'm reading this right from the company that hosts it, from 12:30 a.m. until 6:30 a.m. So it's going to, if you want to check it out, there's a lot of good stuff on there. In fact, extraordinary stuff. I didn't write it. I'm just copying it. But you should go there now, peterwerbe.com. Okay. Here's Shane from Redford. Shane, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Hi.
Yes, Peter. I was calling to rebut the guys earlier that were talking about an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth.
Sure.
I think that we forget to put ourselves in their shoes every once in a while, probably due to our media. But, I mean, if I was an Iraqi and all I saw on my news, well, actually, they probably didn't see too much because it was probably controlled by our government anyways. But if I was in any other Arab country in the Middle East and all I saw on the news was Americans standing over Arab prisoners and whatnot and torturing them, I might want to go out and kill myself, an American, too.
Well,
yeah,
there's been the CIA report which said that, let me see here, the war in Iraq is providing an important training ground and recruitment center for Islamic terrorists. So Bush says that he doesn't care they didn't find any weapons of mass destruction. He said if he had it to do it over again, he would still do it. He said the removal of Saddam Hussein has made America safer because a dictator, a tyrant, a thug with whom he had been at war in the past with whom we had been at war in the past.
Right.
Had been destabilizing a vital part of the world. Well, that's not true at all. It's getting more destabilized. And as that CIA report says, what, you know, more terrorists are being born.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that was the biggest argument I used to get into with fellow classmates at my high school I just graduated from in Redford, was that, you know, we're over there to fight terrorists. Well, the only terrorists that are there now, or most of them, came there from other countries and whatnot because they don't want us in the Middle East to begin with.
Yeah. You know, I just, I've been looking at the wrong clock here. And I'm way overdue on what pays my salary. So, Shane, thanks a lot for calling in. Congratulations on your graduation. We'll be right back.
Your opinion matters. Call 313.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877-U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew is out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday. As I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's true. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are 5 outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do it. I swear to God, I have never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. I found out it's too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh,
I feel like And I'm going to call to send my truck, Nick. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Yes. The broadcast
on the
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City caller 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rip tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5, 101 WRIF. Yes.
Make your requests.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the Poobah.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rock.
Twice.
Is nice. For Tuesday on the Riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. The 101 WRIF.
If it rocks. If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's the Riff.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. The Riff.
He said, come on, get in the chat room, because I think Tom Hartman, who's cited as, he does that while he does his show. I have no idea how he can do it. I've got email. I've got all these screens. I appreciate you listening, folks, and being in the chat room, but I can't do it. I cannot deal with it. All right, it's Martin Luther King Day tomorrow. A lot of celebration going on of his vision and his voice for peace and social justice, and to me, one of the great Americans of our history. And let's see. Oh, yeah, we were talking about the conviction of Charles Grainer, the so-called torturer-in-chief. I say that the torturer-in-chief, though, is right up at the top. George W. Bush that okayed the concept put forth by Secretary of War Rumsfeld and his advisor, Alberto Gonzalez, that you could use harsh interrogation, which then led to what we saw at Abu Ghraib. Doesn't take the individuals off the hook that committed these beastly responses. A couple of people called in and said, hey, you know, they're beheading people, and it's, you know, eye for an eye. Digger, listening in Dearborn, Michigan, writes in, hey, the beheadings didn't start until after the Abu Ghraib story hit. That's interesting. I didn't remember that. In terms of, pardon me, of Martin Luther King Day, Derek writes in from Wyandotte, Michigan. What do you think about school districts that do not celebrate or recognize the great Martin Luther King? Recently, I was talking to my girlfriend, telling her that I'd never had MLK Day off during my K-12 schooling. Her response was that I was nuts because everybody recognizes the day. I didn't realize that there are districts that don't recognize it. Is that how strange? Anyways, let's go on, and let's do this first, and then I wanted to say something about the coronation that's going to happen on Thursday. Cowboy's been waiting a long time to make our show international, calling from Windsor, Ontario. Cowboy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
Oh, thank you, Peter. You know, I've been listening to your show for, since
20 years, 21 years, something like that, the mid-80s. But it's the first time I've ever called.
And welcome.
You know, tomorrow was commemoration of Dr. King's birthday. And, you know, being an African-Canadian, he along with my...
Oh, man, I can't believe I did that. I cut him off. Oh, man. Cowboy, I am so sorry. I apologize. I wanted to... Actually, we don't even hear that phrase, do we? We always talk about African-Americans and African... Hopefully, that is Cowboy. If he calls back, I'm going to blame it on him. I didn't even say, too, while we're waiting to see if Roth Dizzy is our producer and phone screener. I didn't even give him proper credit. Is that Cowboy again? I hope. Let's see. No? All right. What line should I take then? You got to tell me this. You know what I'm going to do? All right. While you're doing that, this obscene spectacle in the midst of war and natural devastation is going to take place on Thursday. It's going to cost tens of millions of dollars. It's going to be a celebration by the rich and the powerful of their ability to their success in seizing the major institutions of this country and carrying out a far right wing revolution. It's the 55th presidential inauguration and the first to be held since September 11th. I considered totally illegitimate. George W. Bush stole the election in 2000. Some of, I haven't even looked at it that closely, but many people think that there was also hanky-panky, and this one particularly in Ohio, and that if the votes had been correctly counted, Bush would have been defeated a second time. This way, in the same manner that he allegedly won. That is... majority popular vote, minor, but losing in the Electoral College. In any event, what probably should have been happening is the second inauguration of Al Gore. But for this one, I mean, this whole thing, I mean, I can't talk about it without just dripping with contempt for everything it represents, from the fact that the corporations have virtually bought the inauguration just like they bought the election. And here's what it takes to pull this spectacle off. Dozens of federal and local law enforcement agencies and military commands are planning what they describe as the heaviest possible security. Virtually everyone who gets within eyesight of the president, either during the January 20th inauguration ceremony at the U.S. Capitol or the parade, will first go through a metal detector or receive a body pat-down. Thousands of police officers and military personnel are being brought to Washington from around the country for the four-day event. Sharpshooters will be deployed on the roofs while bomb-sniffing dogs will work on the streets. Electronic sensors will be used to detect chemical or biological weapons. How about just not having it? How about taking this money and maybe donating it to tsunami relief or to schools in rural America or urban America? How about these greedy corporate entities that have bought our government, using it for something that is, for us, for the people, rather than for their profits? The Secret Service works closely with the Defense Department, the National Park Service, and local police agencies, especially the Washington, D.C. Police and the Capitol Police. About 40 agencies are involved just so we can have this coronation. This is absurd. Take them inside of a building and have the oath administered. Why does this, why does it have to be at this level? I mean, particularly when a war is going on. Now, get this. Washington, D.C. Police Chief Charles Ramsey has sent invitations to the police departments across the country, inviting them to send squads of officers to help with inauguration security. The federal government is paying for officers' hotels, meals, and air travel. So they're bringing in thousands of cops from around the country, and you and me are paying their hotel, meal, and air travel fees. Several thousand officers are expected. Do the math on this. Air travel, hotels, and meals. That includes squads from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, Seattle, Minneapolis, Chicago, Bradenton, Florida, Charlotte, and Greensboro, North Carolina, the North Carolina State Highway Patrol, several law enforcement agencies in Texas, and other parts of the country. This is when I am being disparaging, but when I say this is a coronation, this is not what happens in a secular democratic government. This is what happens when a king is crowned, when a dictator is installed and has some phony election, and then the government essentially celebrates itself. It's put on by the government using our money. Now, groups planning, there are demonstrations being planned, and if you're interested in going to these, there's still time to take opposition, resistance, dissent to Washington to say no to all of this. And there's going to be a little bit of space made for the anti-Bush demonstrators, but most of it's been bought by the corporate sponsors of our government. Parade performers said they also been warned to expect unprecedented security. Now, stick with me on this one. They told us right out it's going to be very, very tight, said Peter LaFlame. He's the executive director of the Spartans Drum and Bugle Corps of Nashua, New Hampshire. Thousands of performers, marching bands, color guards, pom-pom dancers, handbell ringers, got to have the handbell ringers if you're going to have a coronation, drill teams on horseback, and Civil War reenactors will be bussed early in the morning to the Pentagon parking lot across the Potomac in Virginia. While performers disembark and go through metal detectors, bomb-sniffing dogs will search the buses. Well, all this is made necessary by the fact that this spectacle is being put on, with the bell ringers. So the bell ringers are going to come in, they're going to get off the bus, they're going to have metal detectors, go through metal detectors, then the bus is going to be searched, then they get back on the bus. The bus goes to the National Mall, where the performers will spend most of the day in heavily guarded warming tents. Participants, these are the bell ringers, these are the pom-pom dancers, these are the marching bands, have been warned. I'm sorry, that's in the next sentence. That's the end of it all. They said they will have to spend most of the day in heavily guarded warming tents. Participants they've been warned that they will not be allowed to leave the tents except to go to portable toilets accompanied by a security guard. So if you want to take a whiz, you got to have somebody go with you like you're a prisoner, right? But here is the most insane part of it, and this will give you a clue to the type of madmen that are running this government that has become 100% a racket. It's not a government. It's a racket. Anyways, other instructions given performers, including, I've got to say that real clearly, this is, by the way, this is from a Scripps Howard news report. Other instructions given performers include a warning not to look directly at Bush while passing the presidential reviewing stand, not to look to either side, and not to make any sudden movements. One of the sharpshooters will get you. Now, you must think I'm making this up. This is Nero and Caligula, if you remember your Roman history, or if you want something a little closer to our era, it's Stalin and Ceausescu of Romania. Do not look in the eye of the sun god if you are a bell ringer, handbell ringer, I guess it is, or a pom-pom dancer, or a color guard. Instructions included a warning not to look directly at Bush while passing the presidential reviewing stand. Have you ever heard anything so insane? Any pretense that the highest office of this land was actually occupied by a representative of the people rather than the power elite, the ruling class, is just so gone so far out the window. Danielle Adam, she's a co-director of the Mid-American Pom-Pom All-Star Team, and she's from Michigan. She says they want you to look just straight ahead, and that's what they want us all to do. Now, I'm not going to do that. I want to go there, and I want to look at him, see what he does. Hi, this is WRIF, and you're on the air. It's Donald from Canton. Go ahead, Donald. You're on the air.
What's up, Pete?
How you doing?
Nice to talk to you, man.
Good. Welcome.
I just want to ask you, man, what's this world coming to? You know what I mean?
I do. I mean, you can't look at the president.
Exactly.
What's up with that?
Wow. It's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. Anything?
You know what I mean?
Well, I do. I kind of say that. Yeah.
No matter how you look at it, it's a sad state of affairs.
You know why it's a sad state of affairs, Donald? Because everything could be okay. There wouldn't have to be all the killings we see, all the starving that we see, all the disease that we see. We could have just nice, ordinary, normal people in political office and all that. But we've got some terrible troubles.
You're right.
All right. You're right, too. Thank you for calling 313-298-WRIF. I appreciate that. Let's see. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Ken. I'm from calling from Dearborn.
I should have said, hi, Ken, from Dearborn. I got this new multi-million dollar studio, and I didn't even say your name. Welcome.
Okay, I'm a first-time caller.
Welcome.
Thanks. I wanted to talk about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that there can be no peace in the Middle East until the injustices committed by the Israeli government cease against the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
Saddam's regime has violated many human rights. There's no arguing. But this administration has accused the Baathists and Saddam. That's the same thing has been going on with Israel. It's been the stock and trade of the Israeli government since 1948. Human rights violations that Israel has committed against Palestinians, including torture, assassination, assault against civilians, annexation of territory, mass killing, denial of the right to free passage, denial of medical aid, expropriation of water, and economic pauperization. Short of genocide, I cannot think of a single human right that has been violated.
Well, it's typical of what I've always called white colonial settler states. If you think about, I mean, there's a pattern with the European invasion of North America, or of the Western Hemisphere, of South Africa, of Israel, of Australia, that the people that have lived there from time immemorial were thought simply to be people to remove from the land to make room for the European settlers. And once, most of us know that about North America. We know, some of us, or I hope most of us know, that as many as 30 million people were killed over several hundred years, the native people of this country. And we essentially took all their land, and most of us say, yeah, it was pretty dirty, but it's sort of what the Israelis call facts on the ground. I mean, once they've established settlements first they have the entity, well, I shouldn't use that word, once they have a state that's recognized internationally, that has, that then becomes involatile, like the United States is. But then when they start trying to gobble up more land, like in the West Bank, that's when the real, that's when the conflict begins. And that's when you see the kind of activity that has been condemned routinely by the United Nations in the same way that the United Nations routinely condemned, as you said, Iraqi behavior. You know what I did? Did I just knock him off the air, too? I'm sorry, man. Talking about this really POs people. I'm not doing well. My apologies to you for so unceremoniously ending our call. But we have some business to do anyway.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Kambati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877-USEEMORE. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City code 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that. You could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF. Yes.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9
on 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back. We learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, you
don't wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't
never.
Just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans, boots.
I don't do that.
No?
No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all of it.
He sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas up your ass. How
stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast
on the Riff.
101-101-101.
W-R-I-F.
And now, the Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Rip, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Rip Request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Rip Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Rip. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Rip.
There were no weapons of mass destruction. And it was easy enough to find that out. And I said that all during the run-up to the war. Tens of millions of people around the world said there were no weapons of mass destruction. And yet, a billion of our tax dollars went to try to discover them. And they kind of had to do it because Bush and the rest of these liars knew there weren't any, but they had to kind of go through the effort. And they knew that eventually we would forget it. It would be kind of like Monica Lewinsky, you know, or the 2000 election. Well, you know, it was a big deal then, but we're way beyond that. And now it's a war for war. I mean, Bush does not want the U.S. to be driven out of Iraq in disgrace, the way Nixon provided over a war a generation ago that led the U.S. to be driven out of another country it had invaded on false pretenses in disgrace, right? The inauguration, the coronation, this obscene spectacle of corporate power, this racket being installed that's going to fleece the average middle class and working class person all the more, has, among other security arrangements, that instructions are given to the marching bands, the color guards, the pom-pom dancers, the handbell ringers, and the drill teams on horseback, that they cannot look directly at Bush while passing the presidential reviewing stand. Also, do not look to either side and do not make any sudden movements because they're sharpshooters on the roof. And I guess if you look at Bush, I mean, could that be? Are they just going to shoot you down? I don't know. I mean, there's some crazy people that are controlling our lives up here. Let's see. Also, there's a Martin Luther King rally and march tomorrow starting at noon and going through 4 o'clock at Central Methodist United Church. I guess I always get this wrong. Central United Methodist Church, one of the older churches in Detroit. Now, did you hear about this? That this in Wausau, Wisconsin, a man has been protesting the war ever since Bush falsely announced that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. When was that? It was 2002. They started all this these lies. But he always had this sign that said that this war is Bush-it. B-U-S-H-I-T. This war is Bush-it. He did that for 18 months, protesting in Wausau. And suddenly, that he got arrested for blending Bush's name with a swear word and was ticketed for using obscene language in public. This is in Wausau, Wisconsin. He said he's going to fight the citation, calling it a violation of his constitutional rights to free speech, and the city's researching whether the ticket violated any constitutional rights, even though the city attorney advised police to issue the original ticket. We will do the right thing, said a government person there. And let's see, Mike Walschlager, 41, erected the sign near the Marathon County Courthouse last Friday saying, this war is Bush-it. I like that. And that's an obscene word. We know what the obscene word is. Maybe it does conflate it, but I wouldn't say that word. It's two words together. So I've decided every anti-war demonstration that I go on, and I'm going on one soon, I'm carrying this sign. Let them arrest me. I want that to happen. Some other anti-inaugural things are there's going to be an inaugural soup supper and presidential coronation on Thursday in Detroit at the UAW Local 22. That's 4300 Michigan Avenue near Clark Street. And there's going to be a soup, bread, and coffee supper at 5:30. And then at 6:30, King George himself will grace the halls of Local 22, where he will be coronated with much fanfare and pageantry. coronated? Is that a word? And it's going to be, there's going to be a town hall meeting. There's going to be some music, and it'll go until 9 p.m. I may show up at that. Nationally, there's going to be a jazz funeral for democracy, a wake for peace on January 20th in New Orleans, Louisiana. And includes, again, all sorts of bands and this jazz funeral. And it's going to feature New Orleans local musicians. Howard Zinn, the eminent historian, is going to be there and speak as well. At, all right, maybe this is where this came from. One of the things that's going to happen at the coronation in Washington is there is a movement called Turn Your Back on Bush. You can go to turnyourbackonbush.org, and that's what they want people to do. Just when he comes by in the limousine, you're supposed to turn your back. So maybe in retaliation, he's told that the bell, what is it, the handbell ringers and the rest of these people, the pom-pom dancers and all that, that they can't look at him in retaliation. But who knows? Whew. Okay, let's see. We're going to take our next caller right now, and it's Kevin from Southgate, Michigan. Kevin, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Well, good evening, Peter. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
It seems to me when this first started to break, the prison scandal.
Yeah, the Abu Ghraib. Yeah.
Yes. You had that female CEO, the commanding officer was a female. She was coming under the gun for it, but
right.
they all seem to talk about guys in suits, not military suits, but guys in suits instructing them exactly how to do these things, and that's all been kind of washed away. You never hear about that
well
anymore.
Grainer is at once a perpetrator but also a scapegoat. It's pretty clear he's a scapegoat.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what can you expect from this administration? I mean, their core values besides greed and everything else is point the finger and yell real loud and hope everyone believes it.
Yeah, and they're doing that with Social Security. The same people that sold us the weapons of mass destruction, not us. I mean, I don't think most of the listeners to this show, but to the American people and to some of the world, is also trying to sell us this bill of goods about Social Security going broke, which is just an absolute 100% lie.
Yes, it is. And, you know, I talked to my neighbors, and they're all like the emailers earlier, like, well, they behead our guys and, you know, and eye for an eye, and
God,
I come back with, you know, I said, aren't we the good guys, though? I mean, we're the United States of America, for God's sakes. We wear the white hat. We're above that stuff. The world follows our lead.
You know
Is
what?
Is this something we want to lead the world into? Torture prisoners?
Think about this, though, Kevin, as well. You know, the idea of revenge is an appealing human emotion, unfortunately. Of course, you know, it creates this cycle, as someone wrote in, that the beheadings began after the Abu Ghraib and Fallujah assault, stuff like that. But someone has to do that, and it's some, I forgot where it was, either in Afghanistan or in Iraq, there were guys giving prisoners enemas. Now, and so what we've become, rather than someone defending America, we have Americans in uniform giving enemas to helpless human beings, 95% of them who were not in Al-Qaeda or insurgents or anything. They just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Or women. Officers who were, you know, rubbing their breast in the face of these prisoners to humiliate them because of you know, their religion, or wrapping them in Israeli flags. Where the hell they get Israeli flags from at Guantanamo? I mean, so that's what it does to everyone. It debases everyone. First and foremost are the victims of this illegal, unconstitutional, inhumane activity. But then also the people that perpetrate them lessen their humanity greatly. I mean, who wants to live in a community with someone who gives enemas for punishment?
Absolutely.
Yeah, one other thing, too. Soiling yourself, which is great fun on the part of these American interrogators. As I said earlier, they used to have contests to see who could make a prisoner piss his pants, as they said. It piss his pants faster than the other person. This was Mussolini's fascist police. They were known for that. They would force prisoners to drink castor oil, which causes diarrhea, and then they would soil themselves. So it's a frightening precedent, and Bush and Bush Incorporated has disgraced America. All right, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Or I'm going to try something different here. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. I don't have a name for you.
Peter, it's Julene in South Florida.
Hey, welcome.
How are you?
Hi, Julene.
It's good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you.
And always wonderful to hear your words in a sea of right-wing media, even though it's getting a little better. Well, you're the one who's always going to be there.
Well, you were my partner on IE America Radio. Folks, this is the Jalene Jordan, who was my producer and co-host of the Peter Werby Show on the IE America Radio Network from 2000 to 2003, where until we just proved to be too much for him.
We were too much. And, you know, I have some pretty strong beginnings as your producer of this very show.
Yes. Oh, that's right, of the Night Call show as well.
Yes.
When you lived in Detroit. And you should say hello to people all over the country that are listening, because I'm still in touch with our friends in, Santa Fe and Santa
Cruz. Our audience.
Yeah, the people that we loved and that seemed to love us.
Well, hello to everyone. And I want to say that I am going to be representing you and everyone who is on our side in D.C. I'm leaving Tuesday, Peter.
Welcome.
Welcome to D.C. I'll be there.
I'm not going to be.
I want you to be there, but.
I do. I can't go.
Right.
I can't go. I'd love to be there. I was there in 2000.
I know, and it was freezing and
freezing
cold,
rain.
But it was so worth it, wasn't it?
It was. It was a wonderful time there. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm looking for sign suggestions.
War is bullshit.
You know, you and I have had the Bushit moniker for many years. In fact, I was at a party at your house, and a friend of yours had made up some signs. Remember that?
Oh, that's right.
The Bushit signs. I mean, we had it before, and we had to let him down that someone had already come up with that. But for someone to be arrested for that, okay, I understand. But maybe put a little hyphen in there somewhere.
No, well, then it is a naughty word.
Okay, yeah.
Well, how about this, though? I thought maybe I... Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, good. I'm dealing with all these screens here and this mouse.
I'm in the studio, Peter. I wish I could be there to help you.
Yeah.
Now, a question for you. Should I be scared? Should I be scared?
No, I don't think so. I mean, about going there and all the fact that there's 4,000 Marines and all this hyper security and all that.
Yeah.
It's been my impression, for one thing, that that mostly these, I don't know. If you don't go looking for trouble, and 99% of people that are there demonstrating their constitutional rights aren't going to happen. I mean, some people
right.
think just holding up a sign isn't enough, and they're going to do something that's going to cause the police to react, and they're ready. I mean, they
right.
are so ready. I mean, with sharpshooters on the roof, I guess I would tell people that you ought to totally chill.
Well, Peter, let's talk about how when you came down here to South Florida
mm-hmm.
and we went to the anti-FTAA rally, the city of Miami spent $8 million to protect itself from people like you and me and the monk. Remember, we marched alongside a monk.
A monk. Oh, yeah. By the way, FTAA is the Free Trade Area of the Americas, one of the sort of like NAFTA on steroids. It's going to rob us of more of our income if they ever get this thing going. Yeah, I mean, part of the preparations, I mean, it's a good way to use up public funds, our funds, and
yeah.
it sort of justifies in advance any sort of brutal repression of people that are there legally and constitutionally, and that's what happened in Miami. The police made this unwarranted charge against essentially young kids who were in flip-flops and shorts, and they were robocopped out. It was a disgusting spectacle on the part of the Miami police. And whatever happened with that, Jalene? Wasn't there all sorts of investigations and lawsuits?
Oh, and they're ongoing, Peter, at this point, because that would be about, I would say, 14, 15 months ago.
Sure.
So, of course, we know how the legal system works, but it's ongoing, and I believe there have been some minor victories in this on the side of the protesters, which is wonderful. I have a question for you.
Well, wait a minute. I never answered your
okay.
first question. I would
okay.
say that 99% chance is that if you want to stay out of any confrontation, you can, because in Miami, remember our friend David and
David Rovics.
Let's
plug him.
Yeah, our
other friend David.
Our other friend, but David Rovics, sure, who was singing in the big stadium down there. It's, you can go to his website, davidrovics.com, R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovics.com. Our other friend David and a third person, we left, and just all of a sudden, everything was peaceful, and suddenly we saw it start to happen, and a lot of people started running towards the action. We went in the opposite direction.
We did, but still, the pepper spray, you know, wafted in our direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing they want to do is they want to they want as few people. They want to have this this threatening atmosphere there, so as few people as possible it will turn out. Of course, that never is the case. I mean, I suppose there are some people that say, "Wait a minute, I don't need to go there where I might get a hit on the head." Remember, we saw those scenes of these retirees on crutches, and in back of them are these military vehicles with big machine guns on top.
Well, it was unbelievable. It was almost surreal. And in fact, when you say people don't want to bother, I have a guy who was painting, doing some painting in my house, and I told him what I was doing, and you know, he's on our side, Peter. But he said to me, "You know, you're such a pretty young thing. Why do you want to go messing around with that? Why do you want to put yourself in danger?" And I thought, "Oh my gosh, you don't want to get me started. Did you really just say that?" So, a question for you,
yeah.
Not to drag and take too much time, but how can you compare what is going on now? You have been protesting and you've been out in the streets.
How old are you going to make me when you say this?
For
when
a
you
lot finish? Of years, okay? A lot of years you've been doing it, Peter. But
yeah.
Let's talk about Vietnam. How much do you connect this to that at this point? Because we talked about it for years.
Yeah.
It's getting real scary at this point.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of similarities with a government that lies to its people, that in turn causes an enormous loss of life and chaos in the country it invaded. And it creates social chaos at home and this incredible waste of public dollars on this crusade that never had to be, just like Vietnam never had to be, Iraq never had to be, but except for these arrogant presidents, and that includes, you go back to Vietnam, that includes the Democratic president, Johnson, that really began it.
Right, absolutely. Well, listen, I'll be there.
Okay, you're out there. There's an old, what's the phrase? You're out there for us, we're in there for you, or something like that.
Absolutely. So if anyone has any sign suggestions, I'll take them.
Well, what's wrong? Wait a minute. What's wrong with this war is Bush-it?
Well, you know, I think it's good.
It's a little rude.
I'm just looking for ideas.
All right. Thank you to Jalene Jordan calling from Miami, Florida. Appreciate it.
All right. Peter,
you know what, by the way, you know it's like 6 degrees here.
Well, you know, it's only in the 50s here.
Oh, damn.
Rub, rub, rub.
All right.
All right.
To you soon.
Thank
bye-bye.
You, Peter.
I will. Always good to hear from Jalene. And her husband, Troy Hansen, was the assistant program director here at WRIF for a long time. Great guy as well. Here's Larry in Taylor, Michigan. Larry, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Dump. How you doing, Peter? I like
good.
To talk about the movie Fahrenheit 9/11
oh, yeah.
that created so much controversy, especially on the Bush side. I think that we have been really bushwhacked.
Yeah,
I feel about that.
There's a good sign too. There's a sign for Jalene to carry. We've been bushwhacked.
Yes, the Saudi Arabian family knows where Bin Laden is.
You think so?
Yes. Well, that's what the movie says, and the Bush family when. George W. Bush was trying to run for Congress over there in Texas. It says that he failed, of course, in Congress to be there. But then his father said, "Hey, look, come over here. These Saudi Arabian people have money. Why don't you bankroll your oil company?"
Right.
It's bankrupt it. Or just bank it. Well, not really bankrupt it, but bankroll it. And also, you know, Saudi Arabia owns, in this movie, Saudi Arabia owns about 8% of America and different pieces of all these corporations in our company, you know, all these corporations in our country.
Well, yeah, actually, that's what's happened. We've had to put our country in hock for a lot of reasons in just to allow all this investment, but also to finance our debt, which is extraordinary as well. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's go into Detroit and talk to John. John, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I just wanted to bring up three things. The first two are about the coronation.
Sure.
Why I think it's happening, I think it's being put on when this money could obviously be used for something much more worthwhile. It's being put on to try and delude people here and around the world that we're actually for Bush when we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, Bush keeps talking about this mandate, and this issue was decided at the election, where by any proper means of analysis, it's an absolute dead heat. You know, no matter how you talk about what votes may or may not have been properly counted or people who had fully the right to vote, it's a statistical dead heat because there's always a thing about 2 or 3 percentage point for error. So the country is split dead even down the middle, and you would think that in a democratic country, at least one that has bragging rights to that, that the elected official would rule in that manner instead of skewing it so far to the right that it's absolutely almost unimaginable to me.
Right, but the media, all they're going to cover when this is covered on television is the Bush supporters. They're not going to show any of the people who are...
Oh, yeah.
Announcing Bush.
Sure, they will. They won't much. It'll all just be mostly the pomp and ceremony, to be sure. The handbell ringers and the pom-pom dancers
right.
and what have
you. And then as to the security, the reason the security is going to be there is to ensure that some of the things that happened back at the 2000 inauguration doesn't happen in this one, like the eggs pelting the limousine.
Yeah.
And they haven't defloored it. And then the last thing I wanted to say is I don't know if they still do it now, but the Lincoln Park High School never observed Martin Luther King.
Really?
They.
Huh.
They're right here in the Downriver area.
Well, that's too. That's interesting. I didn't know that. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Betty listening in Ann Arbor. Betty, hi. It's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
Hi. Long time to talk with you. I just wanted to say one thing I heard was that a lot of people that are going down there are not going to wear any T-shirts or anti-Bush anything so they can blend in with the Republicans and then just turn their back, you know,
yes.
when they're not expecting it. And I turned in late to your show, and I don't get to listen to it as often as I'd like, but I'd like to say, if you haven't already mentioned this, I've heard going around that Thursday we're not supposed to buy a thing.
Oh, I forgot all about that. It's called not
stock
a...
Stock up on Wednesday and during the week and don't buy a pack of cigarettes or gas or milk, anything.
On Thursday, it's called not a damn dime day.
Yeah, see if we can cause a wave in the stock market or some kind of a little slap at these people.
Well, if you go to my website, it has all of the stuff about that at peterwerby.com. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
Well, I unfortunately don't have a computer, but I do want to get the word out, and I've been talking to everybody I can.
Well, also, Betty, you know that there's, I think, busloads of students that are going from the University of Michigan, and adults, non-students, are leaving from Ann Arbor to go to the coronation.
I'm disabled pretty badly with arthritis.
Ooh.
And one more thing, this is a little off topic, but you know the way they push these drugs, and push these drugs all the time on TV? And all,
sure.
All my friends I'm talking to are on Zoloft and Xanax and all of this crap. And I had this theory, and then I read this in Mother Jones. The military is researching the possibility of using club drugs like Special K and antidepressants like Prozac as non-lethal weapons in counter-terrorist and peacekeeping operations. We need something besides tear gas that would put people to sleep or in a good mood, explained Susan Levine, research director of the government's Joint Non-Lethal Weapons
Division. So they're going to spray everybody like with ecstasy or something?
Yeah. And then it says,
wow.
A study from the Marine Corps conducted by Pennsylvania, blah, blah, spiked with ecstasy or rubber bullets filled with Zoloft could produce less anxious, less aggressive, more tranquil behavior. The military also wants to deploy drugs to soothe unruly mobs, including hungry refugees excited over distribution of food.
Oh, my God. These people are absolutely crazy. I mean, that's who's ruling us now. On the other hand, maybe if we began with Bush and the military and the cops and the people, maybe we could all take ecstasy. And just have a love fest like in the 60s. Betty, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling us. I forgot about this little number, too, about how some people, of course, we've seen some terrible exploitation going around about the tsunami relief. I mean, just really a footnote, because overwhelmingly people are opening their hearts, opening their pocketbooks. There was just on Saturday night the big concert for tsunami relief that, as usual, the rock and rollers and the musicians of the world step up, open their hearts, and contribute their efforts. But there, we've read about people doing exploiting children, and they do it in different ways. How about this? This is from the Washington Post. A Virginia-based missionary group said this week that it has airlifted 300 tsunami orphans from the Muslim province of Banda Aceh to Jakarta, the Indonesian capital, where it plans to raise them in a Christian children's home. You ready for this? These Christian missionaries have, as happened all over the world, including the United States, has essentially kidnapped these Muslim kids, and they're going to raise them as Christians. It's called World Help, and many of the religious charities do not attach any conditions to their aid, but many of them have policies against proselytizing, but a few of the smaller groups have been raising money against evangelical Christians by presenting the tsunami emergency effort as a rare opportunity to make converts in hard-to-reach areas. These people are horrid, just absolutely horrid. I mean, normally, here, the World Help website said, normally Banda Aceh is closed to foreigners and closed to the gospel, but because of this catastrophe, our partners there are earning the right to be heard in providing entrance for the gospel. So maybe it wasn't so bad that these people got wiped out like the kids' parents. The appeal said World Help was working with native-born Christians in Indonesia who want to, quote, plant Christian principles as early as possible, close quote, in the 300 Muslim children, all younger than 12, who lost their parents in the tsunami. And now these right-wing Christian freaks want them to lose their culture.
This is the Riff's award-winning Night Call.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, you know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877-USEEMORE. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew is out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday. As I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's true. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are five outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I still feel like you want this. There's no way I can do this. Oh, man. I never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to... drop that in ASAP. Shout outs too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh.
Oh, I feel like and I'm going to call the friend Mike Clark next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Yes. The broadcast program. On the Riff.
101-101.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite Riff tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City color 33 on the Riff lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Oh my God. Maui Time 2K5. The Riff tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Make your request.
Win cool Riff gear.
And schmooze with the Hoobah. It's your all-request Riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
Twice.
Is nice. Do for Tuesday on the Riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Two for Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Two for Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Two for Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks,
if it really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
Riff. Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Yeah.
Of course, too late. Social Security.
Yeah, sure.
You touched on how and I couldn't say it better, that they're doing the same thing with creating the illusion of a crisis in Social Security as they did with the illusion of weapons of mass destruction to have the Iraq War.
Is the boy that cried wolf. I mean, why would anybody believe them again, eh?
Well, I don't think they get held accountable. And I don't think that the so-called liberal media calls them to task.
No, they don't. Bush defines the agenda, and And they keep saying Bush is going to take on Social Security reform. It doesn't need reform. There is no crisis. There is no iceberg.
I agree that it probably needs some work between now and sometime in the future, but I don't think privatization is the answer.
No, it needs some tinkering between now and 2052 when there'll be a problem.
What do you think that the ordinary people can do to bring this out, to compel, maybe compel more news sources to...
Well, it's the old, short of... of doing what I see everybody from trade unions to the AARP, the Retirees Association, urging people to call their elected officials. And I know people that have been on a campaign to do that. I don't think there's much of a danger that our two senators, Stabenow and Levin, will vote for any kind of mad scheme that's going to entail running up the debt hundreds of billions of dollars more, because there's going to have to be all this money borrowed. And then, of course, where's the money going to come from? Well, the reason they have to borrow is because there's going to be this hole in the benefits for the next generation to retire. I mean, soon. I mean, people that are going to retire in the next 10 years. People that aren't retired are going to be financing them. And if money has been taken to administer this new system, if money is being taken to pay all these fees to Wall Street brokers, which is really what it's all about, and if all this money has been taken to go into these private accounts, who's going to pay the people that are retiring in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years? It just ain't there. I mean, the way you fix it is you take off the cap on payroll tax. So right now it's capped, and a number of listeners have emailed me about this even tonight. It's capped at $87,500. Why? I mean, why shouldn't someone that's making $9 million continue to pay payroll tax? You get all the millionaires and people making big bucks, and there is zero problem to fix, for one thing. The problem is fixed right there.
I agree. Isn't the whole plan of this administration to shift the tax burden entirely on the working class?
Sure, that's it. I mean, they see they've been looting the middle class, they've been looting the working class, they've been destroying the poor, and we do damn little, even though there's tens of millions of us, so they can just keep on going. I mean, there's got to be a mass opposition movement, or they're going to destroy us. And, it's as simple as that, I think. All right, thank you. Appreciate your call. Here is Anna from Ann Arbor. Anna, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
You know, I would absolutely love it if you would dedicate one of your entire shows to just solutions and what are we going to do about these things.
Sure.
It is a mess.
That's not a bad idea.
You could start it out with, you know, for instance, how are we going to start a Detroit City Fund, you know?
The city's bankrupt. State is in financial trouble. Most states are in financial trouble. Thousands of school districts are in financial trouble. And we just spent $2 billion proving what most of us knew, that there was no weapons of mass destruction.
I know. It's all bad. Like I said, I would really like it if we could focus on solutions, or you would spend just one of your shows.
That's right. I mean, I usually spend almost all the time pointing out the problem. So,
the
solution?
It's good to know, and it's good to educate people.
Yeah, I agree.
But I feel like there's not enough focus on solutions. And also, I didn't hear you mention, speaking about this Thursday, about the Inauguration Day boycott that that writer from Hazel Park is starting. Have you heard about it?
About, is that the one, not a one damn dime, or?
No, that's a different website out of Massachusetts. This one is started by David Livingstone.
Oh, David Livingstone. I know David.
From Hazel Park. He's a writer.
And what did he start?
He wants to start a national Inauguration Day boycott where there's no commerce. For instance, he's encouraging everyone not to go to work that day, not to buy anything, no gas, no nothing, because he feels, and I feel the same way too, that this is what the Republicans really listen to is money.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but no, that's
affect their pocketbooks.
But that's what I'm scrolling down my website, peterwerby.com.
Well, I got this information from a friend, and then I found it on commondreams.org website.
That not one damn dime day in America. That? Yeah. That's it. I think that's what David Livingston put together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's at the bottom of my at the bottom
okay,
of the page.
I must have confused it with something.
Yeah,
from
it's
Massachusetts.
It's Inauguration Day, Thursday, January 20th is not one damn day, one damn dime day in America.
Okay, so that's what he's calling it. Okay.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, he wants, you know, he's really encouraging people, and like I said, I'm total support, totally on his side that you know people shouldn't go to work or.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
I'm not going to go to work. Hey, boss. Hey, Doug. I'm not working on Thursday.
Or
and I'm not spending one damn dime for necessities or for impulse purchases.
Somebody did ask me, though. They're like, well, what if you're a, you know, work for a public place like the library or something?
Well,
that's not considered commerce. So.
Right. Another thing is that everybody can't take the day off. You don't want nurses or doctors taking the time off. But here, let me just read you a line or two. It's not one damn dime for necessities or for impulse purchases. Not one damn dime for anything for 24 hours in protest against the Bush inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we should do that more often. I think it's a great idea. So.
General strike, they
mm-hmm.
call it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Kevin from Romulus. Kevin, hi. It's Peter Werby.
Hi, Peter. Great show. I always listen to it.
Thank you.
As a compliment to you, that's the only time I don't listen to the BBC is when your show is on. So.
You listen to the BBC? Okay.
Okay. My concern, or I mean, you're a person with a lot of good ideas and stuff, and I was just wondering. I mean, we're looking here at the way our government's set up. Every branch of government is now controlled by pretty far right. Republicans and Democrats seem to be totally useless, and now they're talking about taking away the filibuster, so they have absolutely no power. And I don't understand how even after this election, Democrats still are trying to be Republican, not Democrat. And you have a couple people like Senator Kennedy talking about how the last thing the country needs is two Republican parties.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what is the solution. I mean, if they have a simple majority and they can pass anything, I mean, it's just going to get worse.
It will. And the Democrats are pretty useless. I said that for the first time in my entire life, I voted for a Democratic presidential candidate, and it turned out he was fairly worthless. If I think that Dean. Howard Dean. Howard Dean could have won because he would have not tried to equivocate. It would have been a candidate that people would have supported, as opposed to almost everybody that voted for Kerry was doing so to vote against Bush. That's the only reason I voted for Kerry. It's like I held my nose and voted for him. Now, there's got to be some major changes the way we approach politics, and trying to reform the Democratic Party to get them to really be a liberal and progressive vote and not just Republican light at the national level particularly is just useless, just hopeless, not so much useless, but hopeless, I'd say. People have been trying it for I don't know how long.
Thanks for your really good show.
All right, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. And, this is always so embarrassing. You know, I don't, here's again, I said don't explain, don't complain. Sharon writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The province I'm talking about is called Banda Aceh. And I don't ever listen to, I don't ever watch television. So I read all this stuff. So I'm sometimes that's why I probably sound like an idiot because I didn't pronounce the name of that town correctly. Jolene Jordan, my co-host and producer from the old Peter Werby show, called in, and a number of people have, she said she's going to Washington, want to know some sign ideas. I got to say this real carefully to her because of it. But Dysfunctional University writes in to say a good sign would be Buck Fush. Buck Fush. Okay. Roy from outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico, says tell Jolene hello. Let's see. Here's some possible signs. Joe writes in, Clinton lied, but no one died. How would that be for a sign? Yeah, I think that would be on the money. Joe, hopefully, I think Jolene is still listening, probably, in Miami. So let's listen to Jill, who's in Allen Park, Michigan, though. Jill, hi, it's Peter Werby, and you are on the air.
Hi, Peter. First off, I wanted to say that kings are coronated, presidents are inaugurated, and this was not a monarchy last time I checked.
Yeah.
And then as far as Abu Ghraib, none of the callers mentioned what the state of mind that the prison guards might have been in,
Yeah.
As far as, you know, it's hard to say what you would do in a wartime situation. I certainly don't endorse torture, but I think that given the situation, you know, you might...
What was the situation? They had prisoners brought in. They weren't quite clear who they were. It turned out the vast majority of them were either common criminals or people that had had their neighbors accuse them of being members of insurgent groups. Very frequently, as they came to find out, that they were misidentified purposely for revenge or for advantage or what have you. So,
right,
what do you think the state of the mind or the state of mind of people like these brutal characters wearing U.S. uniforms was?
I think it's hard to say how you would react in a wartime situation when you're not in one. I don't know that the guards were made aware of why the people were in prison or not, but just being in a wartime situation, like my father was an interrogator in Vietnam, and you know, I mean, he would never hurt a flea, but like at the time he was told, you know, the things that you might do might get us information that'll save American lives and, you know, things like that.
Well, I don't know what your father did, but American interrogators in Vietnam behaved beastly and brutally and did terrible things to people or supervised while the South Vietnamese Army, the ARVN, did that. Nothing to be
right.
proud of, I would say.
No, absolutely not. And it's, like I said, it's hard to say, you know, the way you would behave when you're back at home in your civilized country and the way you might behave when you're being shot at and,
well,
you know, you're seeing your friends and your brothers and sisters go down.
You know, it always happens, though, just like this Grainer was a guard at a Pennsylvania prison. So his hobby is brutalizing people of color. He got to do it in Pennsylvania to African Americans. Then he gets sent over to Iraq, where he gets to do it to Iraqis. There's a pattern there. And the United States, the people aren't very fond of people that have just killed their comrades on a battlefield. But there certainly was the killing of prisoners on both sides in all wars and what have you. But you don't hear any stories of the way the Americans did that kind of stuff, for instance, to German prisoners of war. Whereas,
right.
Yeah.
And it's different being an interrogator or a prison guard as well, but, I mean, not just specifically to Grainer, but, you know, any of the people that were, you know, accused of perpetrating this torture or who perpetrated this torture, you know, we don't know what they may have been told or, it's hard to see what you would do in the situation until you're in it.
Well, I understand that fully, but, I do. I can say unequivocally, that I would never do anything like that. And it takes a particular mentality, the people that wanted it. We got to remember, too, that all the fun that they had doing it, the photographs of showing them smiling and posing, they were proud of their work. They were proud of humiliating these people that they got absolutely zero information from about the conditions of insurgency because these people had none. They were just the innocent victims of these people that thought it was okay to do what they were doing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in. All right. Hey, we're going to have to leave a few people stranded, so my apologies to them. I want to get in our last, as we do sometimes, the song we start with at 11 p.m. we end with at 5 to 1. So this is U2, Pride. This is dedicated to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on his day. We've already gotten into Monday, haven't we? And Bono, of course, a great admirer of Dr. King. All right, enjoy the day. Do something that he'd be proud of. I don't know. I guess we didn't get that, did? Oh, I see what's happening. All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll do some spots. We'll do it when we come back.
Night Call is back on 101.
Back. It's not back.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They
care committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, you know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877-U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present
Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kaanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City color 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kaanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5.
The Rip tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser.
Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5.
101 WRIF.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Rip and Rock at 9 o'clock.
With Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9.
On 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
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 Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well,
and
you're
I don't
just
wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't
never.
Just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans, boots.
I don't do that.
No? No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I Yeah, I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not sure your dipstick's touching all, but...
sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas up your ass. Ha, ha,
stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Back in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101-101.
W-R-I-F.
And now, The Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff.
WRIF Detroit. Now, more with your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. Not a pleasurable subject, though, that we're going to talk about. It's the image of America and the reality of America abroad, how it treats prisoners. We've talked about this subject before, about torture and what role it plays in the interrogations and incarceration of American prisoners at Guantanamo, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And I believe we even spoke about this earlier with my guest. It's Michael Ratner, and he is president of the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York. He has a brand new book out called Guantanamo, What the World Should Know, and it's co-written with Ellen Ray. It has ex-New York Times correspondent Anthony Lewis's essay, A President Beyond the Law, which is certainly one of the subjects we'll take up. And CCR, not Creedence Clearwater Revival in this case, folks, but the Center for Constitutional Rights, represents victims of torture in Iraq and Guantanamo, and and in separate lawsuits filed in the United States, and has been the leading opponent of the Bush administration's treatment of detainees being held in the U.S. and around the world. Michael Ratner, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
I think probably the first thing we should clear up is that if that people would think, why in the world is a domestic group concerned with our constitutional rights representing people that are incarcerated in Iraq and Guantanamo and probably mean harm towards the United States?
Well, I might take issue with probably mean harm, because I think, you know, a lot of the people that were picked up, there were some 8,000 to 10,000 at least in Iraq, and certainly 1,000 in Guantanamo, that never had any kind of hearings, weren't picked up on the battlefield. And so we're not sure at all who these people are. And the government has been releasing some that turn out to be utterly innocent of anything. But the reason, of course, we're concerned, and I think the first reason is, it's our government that's carrying out torture against people both in Iraq and in Guantanamo, as well as in Afghanistan. So I think that we're responsible for what our government does. It's our government. And I think a second reason that is the most immediate and pragmatic is what Colin Powell said when he objected to this kind of treatment in a memo to the president. And he said, look at how we treat people and whether or not we agree with the Geneva Conventions or abide by the Geneva Conventions, which prohibit inhumane treatment and torture. Whether we do that will make a big difference in how our own soldiers are treated around the world. So that if we expect our soldiers to be respected, if we expect Americans to be respected, then we must do what we've done for 100 years. Since 1900, we have been at the forefront of protecting the human rights and basic rights of soldiers around the world, mm-hmm. and particularly our own soldiers. And he said, it's going to make it impossible. When you put an American soldier into a situation where he gets captured, they're going to say, well, we don't have to obey Geneva. Your country didn't obey Geneva either. And that's why Powell, who is not in love with here, but who still went off and against this administration on what it was doing, because he was frightened about what's going to happen to American soldiers. And in the final point on this, when we went into the Supreme Court with the Guantanamo cases, which we won, we had 50,000 former prisoners of war that signed a brief saying, this will harm how we are, what happens to U.S. soldiers.
Let's go through that again, Michael Ratner. You had 50,000 former POWs?
Well, it was an organization that represented 50,000 former POWs, and they said what's happening in Guantanamo with not having hearings, with the kinds of treatment people are receiving, with not obeying Geneva Conventions, that is incredibly harmful to the military. And the people who have been the strongest against torture and against these indefinite detentions and Guantanamo and Bagram are, interestingly enough, people in the military. There's a set of military lawyers I work with who are defending people in front of these military commissions or tribunals who are outraged. They say, look it, if we're going to convict people, we have to convict the right people. If not, we're convicting the wrong people, and the right people, the bad guys, are still out there trying to kill us. So you want a tribunal that really does something fair, and we want one that comports with basic due process that we all have in the United States. So there's a whole set of military lawyers. Then there's a whole set of brigadier generals. These are the high generals who signed an open letter to the president essentially saying, this new confirmation hearing where you're going to make Alberto Gonzalez, the new Attorney General of the United States, we think there's some serious problems with this guy. And that has to do, of course, with Geneva Conventions, allowing inhumane treatment, and issues like that. And they basically opposed that nomination for that reason. Hmm. So we're talking about something that in some way should be as American as apple pie, opposing this kind of conduct. But unfortunately, in the country so far, it's not.
Michael Ratner is my guest. The book is Guantanamo, What the World Should Know. It's published by Chelsea Green. You can go to chelseagreen.com. I'll have that on my website, and I'll give you that information again later and throughout our interview. Of course, the common response to this is, hey, I don't care about these people. If they have any potential even for doing any harm like we experienced on September 11th, or if they were actually involved in trying to do harm to Americans, it's too bad. I mean, I'm more concerned with the safety of our country and directly with myself and my family. So if a few people are going to get hurt in this manner, I guess I'm willing to relinquish their rights because they're not even Americans.
Well, that is the common response. One second here.
Yeah, you sound Michael Ratner.
Let me just get a little.
Go ahead. I'll fill the space there because I'm kind of in the same way. I've got a cough drop here. I've got a
transmit it to me.
I got a glass of water.
Transmit it to me by email. One second, Pete. I want to get some water.
Okay. And as you know, folks, we don't do any editing on this, so I'm just going to have to fill the space. The book is Guantanamo, What the World Should Know. And the Michael Ratner is the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and he's at the center of this landmark U.S. Supreme Court case, Rossiter versus Bush. Let me just finish this. So the case will help to decide the future for thousands of people being held in U.S. detention centers without charge or any hope of trial. You know what, Michael? We have this new technology, and this is all being recorded, and so I have no capacity to edit this whatsoever. But, hey, it's just like what would happen if it was live. So go ahead. I was saying that the common response is, too bad about these people. No matter what it takes, we can't allow another September 11th to occur.
That is the most common attitude I get when I speak or talk or go on the radio around the country. And I think what people are missing are a couple of things. One is we spent probably 1,000 years of civilization trying to establish certain laws that make us human. And I think going beyond those laws, violating those laws, allowing torture, really brings us into a state of, I would say, of really being uncivilized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that to me is a bottom line. You just don't do it. A second reason you don't do it, of course, is that it's a slippery slope. You always hear the example of the ticking time bomb. Well, what if some guy has the bomb and he knows where it is? Shouldn't you torture that guy? Of course, there are very difficult cases. That case rarely comes up. But once you start torturing that guy, then you torture the next guy down the line, and eventually it becomes, as one of the investigators on the Abu Ghraib scandal in Iraq said, it became, quote, almost routine. So once you open that door to torture, you begin to torture a lot of people.
You know what has occurred to me? I often, of course, what we think about is people that have received anything from humiliating to brutal torture to, in some cases, even death at the hands of U.S. military throughout Afghanistan and Iraq. But I also think once those barriers are dropped for individuals, we can always find people to do anything. We can find people to pull out fingernails, disembowel people, whatever is needed. I mean, you want to have a society in which that is not permitted, but it permits people like the Sergeant Grainer that's on trial as we record this to practice. What happens to him as a human being as well? He dehumanizes certainly his victim, but he is dehumanized in the process as well.
Well, I just spent a day with somebody who was talking about that and working on some ideas around that, about how it dehumanizes the torturer. And, in fact, one of the documents we got was from a person who apparently, according to the documents, in Abu Ghraib, had worked in a hospital and intravenously put bleach into somebody's veins. And when he went in to see the psychiatrist, he kept saying, well, it was a dream, it was a dream, it was a dream. And he was afraid. He just couldn't confront the fact that he was actually a torturer, and it eventually slides people down into what medical people call post-traumatic stress syndrome, which whether you're the torturer or the tortured, you go through that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's right. And then on a broader level, it demeans the whole society. What I've learned in these situations is, the veneer we have on all of us of civilization and of human treatment and humane treatment is a veneer, and as soon as it's lifted, and it's lifted primarily, I think, in these Abu Ghraib cases by the chain of command going all the way up, certainly to Rumsfeld and possibly even to the president, that when you lift that and you say, soften these people up, use dogs, which Rumsfeld in his own hand basically said, exploit phobias, e.g. dogs, when you say that at the highest level, it opens a door, it's like a Pandora's box, and every evil just flies out. So what's important in a society is to have, the people at the top make it clear that this kind of conduct is unauthorized.
And we're actually going in the opposite direction. Now, Michael Ratner, let me ask you about your book that Chelsea Green Publishers printed, Guantanamo, What the World Should Know. And on the cover, there's this very disturbing photograph, which I think, is this the one that is inside an airplane?
Yes, that's the one that people are chained down.
They're transporting people, so they have prisoners chained down. That's not unusual.
But here's the way they have it. They take them from, first of all, these were guys picked up in Pakistan or Afghanistan in the early period, January, February, March 2002. What they did is they took them into a really bad place, Bagram in Afghanistan, where there have been many, many reports of torture and even murder by being tortured. Came out 2 years ago, even before the photos, and nothing much was done about it. They then beat the heck out of a lot of these people. Then they put them into this plane, and they're chained in a way. They're chained flat to the floor, almost flat, with the goggles on, the earmuffs, the whole business. And if you notice in the photograph, which, of course, the listeners can't see, but there's a blue pad under one of the people, and that's because to go to the bathroom, they put a blue pad under, much like the one I put in my house when the dog makes a mistake.
Hmm.
And so they have to, like, do everything they do on themselves and in that pad in an 18 or 24-hour period. So it's a pretty brutal method, very brutal method of transport. And, of course, early on, these people were called by Rumsfeld the worst of the worst. These are people who tried to kill 10,000 Americans. What turns out, of course, is that many of those, and a lot of this is anecdotal, although they've started to release a number, had nothing to do with any kind of terrorism or war and are mostly useless to the Americans for either interrogation or as terrorists.
What about the people that they've identified as enemy combatants and that they were Taliban fighters? I mean, that would seem that they were, in fact, the army of the government of Afghanistan, no matter how loathsome the Taliban were and no matter what kind of allowance they gave to Osama bin Laden to be in his country. They still, I mean, what is this whole enemy combatant category?
Well, there's two issues about that. One is a lot of the people, particularly in Guantanamo, were picked up in Afghanistan and Pakistan because of bribes, because of personal feuds, etc. And so they were said by other villagers or other enemies, oh, that guy's Taliban, he's a fighter, pick him up. And frequently the Americans picked them up and took them to Guantanamo. So the first thing we have is that a lot of these people shouldn't be there. The second thing is, and why they're called enemy combatants, is the U.S. early on decided, even though people might have been fighting on the side of the Taliban, that they weren't going to treat them under the Geneva Conventions as prisoners of war, which is what they should have been treated under, as the Red Cross said, and the Red Cross, of course, enforces the Geneva Conventions. And so they didn't treat them as prisoners of war, and they made up a category called enemy combatants, which is just what it says. It's, they think they were enemies who were fighting as combatants against the United States. But the big thing is that it doesn't give them any rights at all, because the Geneva Conventions gives you certain rights. The right to only be interrogated in a humane way, the right to be in a prisoner of war camp, the right to write home, all these kind of rights. When you're an enemy combatant, because it has no legal definition, it's essentially made up by the government, they can do whatever they want to you. And when our fine nominee for this so-called fine nominee, Alberto Gonzalez, decided we shouldn't apply Geneva and that they should be called enemy combatants and decided to avoid the hearings, none of these people had hearings, that's what he decided, that they could be treated inhumanely, and that's why his memo is so devastating. He basically says Geneva Conventions are, quote, obsolete.
And quaint, I remember he said as well. Michael Ratner, I want to get back to Alberto Gonzalez and what it would mean to have him installed as the Attorney General, but we really haven't gotten inside of your book, Guantanamo, What the World Should Know. What do you think that the world doesn't know? That made you and your co-author Ellen Ray print this book?
Well, I think what happened after 9/11 is a group of really a clique of people got together at Justice Department. It was Cheney, it was Rumsfeld, it was Gonzalez and others, and decided they were going to go off the books in terms of how they treated people and do the same things to people that other countries we've condemned have done, whether that's Pinochet in Chile or Abacha in Nigeria or whatever, and really just not obey the law at all. And they were going to be able to get away with that by setting up an international, what I would call, someone once said to me, the first offshore concentration camp of the empire, or a gulag, it would be called in the Soviet Union, but a place that had no law that applied to it. Guantanamo is a military base in Cuba that the United States has controlled since the early 1900s. It's 45 square miles. The U.S. position has been no court in the United States can look into what we're doing in Guantanamo. It's basically a place that could be on the moon somewhere. And therefore, the United States said, why don't we just send, or the Bush administration really, why don't we just send everybody to Guantanamo
And there we can treat people however we want. We can interrogate them however we want. We can do whatever we want. And so one thing that the world doesn't know, and it should know, but I think most of the world knows, but not in the United States, is that we've essentially set up an offshore concentration camp, interrogation camp, or a gulag where the courts were supposed to have nothing to do with it.
Is there any success there? I mean, in terms of intelligence or holding back people that might harm the U.S.? Because, I mean, at some level, people always go to the practical. But, I mean, that's like allowing the third degree to be leveled against U.S. prisoners. I mean, as you said earlier, Michael Ratner, is that once you start allowing that, even if someone, you know, someone is, quote, guilty, if you beat a confession out of them, like was done in Chicago during the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, now I'm getting your cough, that becomes standard operating procedure on everybody that comes through the system. But I think that people want to know what these tens of millions of dollars that have been spent there, what has been done to people that are held. Is there any practical effect that one could point to and say, well, at least we got this out of it?
I doubt there's any, very little or any. Certainly, I think it's people are well aware that many of our agencies that I normally don't work with have objected to the kinds of procedures and tactics and torture that are used in Guantanamo. And they say this is impractical. FBI agents say this is not the way to get information. Torture doesn't work. It gives you false information. Three of my clients who were freed were from United Kingdom, picked up in Pakistan and Afghanistan, young men who were there for schooling, or one of them building waterworks, other kinds of things, picked up, taken to Guantanamo. After a year in Guantanamo of this kind of stuff, from dogs to stripping, et cetera, they confess, in quotes, confessed to meeting Osama bin Laden and being trained at the Al-Farouk training camp in Afghanistan. Turns out, 6 months later, British intelligence finally gets a fire under them and does some investigation in their case. And as they had initially said, my three clients, they were in England during the entire time, and it was provable.
Hmm.
So what you get is you get a lot of false information, and you get, particularly in Guantanamo, which is a no-exit situation, everybody's assumed to be guilty, because why else, if you're an interrogator, you're saying to yourself, why else would this guy be here? This isn't like people you pick up on the street in New York. It's everybody, this is Guantanamo. So they are thinking it's guilty. So my clients, the only way to get any better treatment, to stop being put in isolation, to stop the use of a dog, is to confess to the lowest level they can think of. And the lowest level in this case, well, they met Osama bin Laden or something like that. So these things don't work. I mean, I think it's clear they don't work. And what's amazing to me is that our key allies in this, as I said earlier, were military people. But also there's documents here from the FBI that were just stunning. Where the FBI goes down there to look and see what's going on, and they complain to their superiors, and they complain to the Department of Defense, what are you guys doing? They see a woman go into the interrogation room, a woman interrogator. A Muslim is chained to the floor. She sits chained to a floor on a chair. She sits on his lap, starts rubbing lotion all over him. Then she bends back his thumbs. Then she grabs his genitals. And the FBI guy is saying, what is going on here? And the other soldier, American soldier, says to him, well, this is nothing. You should see when she finishes. The guy is writhing on the floor, throwing up. So what you have here is not just Michael Ratner sitting out here, oh, you don't do this, but you have our intelligence agencies and places like the FBI saying, this has got to stop.
You know, you see so many photographs of American prisoners, and including the one on the cover of your book, Guantanamo, What the World Should Know, blindfolded. Here's this man strapped down, absolutely immovable. And also in Iraq, it seems to be standard procedure to blindfold prisoners. Is there any... I actually thought that there was a Geneva Convention prohibition against that, because I know if that was done to our soldiers, we'd probably be pretty upset. I would.
Yeah, it's considered inhumane treatment under Geneva, and one of the things Rumsfeld authorized a whole series of these himself. That's what I can't get over. Department of Defense, Secretary of Defense. It's a sheet of list of things that he authorized, which aren't even what we've seen in Abu Ghraib, but there's things that lead there. I said one was dogs. The other is hooding. The other is chaining to the floor, stress positions. And Rumsfeld's so involved in this kind of torture that he even writes on it, when it says 4 hours a day of stress position, in his own handwriting, he says, how come only 4 hours? I stand 10 hours a day. So you're seeing essentially torture carried out at the highest levels of our government.
Well, I was going to say, now we have Sergeant Grainer, who took obvious delight in humiliating and hurting people, and I think it's instructive that he was a former prison guard in the United States. I don't think this is, a lot of this stuff isn't unknown here in our prisons as well. At some point, Bush or somebody said that Abu Ghraib is un-American, and I'm thinking, man, and then I Googled prison abuse. And I was saying, well, you know, this is pretty American as well, but I'm straying. What I really want to get at is the culpability of Sergeant Grainer and the people that actually carried out these loathsome tortures, I mean, as compared to the higher ups like Rumsfeld.
Wait, say that again. I'm sorry about. What was the exact question?
Well, I know. I get convoluted questions. I mean, we have a trial going on now. The people who actually carried it out, their defense is, I was just following orders. We know that doesn't work from Nuremberg after World War II. On the other hand, he was, right?
There's no question.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that the Grainer here, look, he did some very bad stuff, and he shouldn't be walking around. There's not any issue about that, assuming he did a lot of that stuff, because, you know better, I think, than to, put men in sexual pyramids and lead them around by leashes and chain them to the walls and all this kind of stuff. But when you look at the context in which it happened, first you have Rumsfeld ordering a whole bunch of stuff and authorizing a whole bunch of stuff that's clearly inhumane and that amounts to torture. You have memos coming out of Alberto Gonzalez and others that say the president can, as the authority to torture people, and defining torture in a way that it doesn't include even the stuff we saw in the photos at Abu Ghraib. Then you get Grainer's immediate superiors from the military intelligence people who were there saying, soften people up tonight. Or when after they soften them up and the guy is a little more cooperative and whatever that means the next day, they say, good job, Grainer. And then you have General Sanchez in charge of all of Iraq, himself authorizing the use of dogs. So Grainer's best defense here is, look it, there was not just a context, but there was a whole set of orders coming down from the top that said I could do these kinds of things. And then you have Rumsfeld really saying, as the insurgency is growing in Iraq, I need actionable intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's really saying is,
do what you have to do. Hey, we've got only like about 90 seconds left for a long question. What next? They're talking about holding prisoners indefinitely in Guantanamo, spending $20 million or so for a prison facility. Just a quick wrap-up of what we can expect and what's going to the Center for Constitutional Rights, how you're going to relate to this.
Well, two things right now that I think are important. One is if you go to the website of the CCR, it's ccr-ny.org, and there's two letters on there you can send to people. One is to send to the Senate and the other senators opposing Gonzalez's nomination as Attorney General. A second one is to send to the German prosecutors, where we have actually started a German federal criminal case against Rumsfeld down the line for what happened at Abu Ghraib. That's what to do to take action. I think in addition, here what we can see is they're building long-term permanent detention facilities forever without people ever having a trial. They're continuing the use of torture. The CIA has basically tried to still exempt itself. Gonzalez said, oh, we're not using torture anymore. But CIA is still right in there, and there's places all over the world where that's going on. There are still a huge number of people in Guantanamo. So this administration is fighting tooth and nail to continue to violate the law.
Guantanamo's the book, subtitled What the World Should Know. It's something we all should know. It's published by Chelsea Green Publishing. ChelseaGreen.com is the website. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, PeterWerbe.com, and I'll have a link to it. Michael Ratner is the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Peter.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, quickly, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit ucmore.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, you know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877-U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit ucmore.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew was out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday. As I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's true. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are 5 outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I still feel like you want this. There's no way I can do this. Oh, God, I've never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to... drop that in ASAP. I found out it's too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh,
I feel like shit. I'm going to call to send my truck next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike, the morning
broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101.1
Riff.
Rocks.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF, and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City color 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Oh my God.
Maui Time 2K5.
The Rift tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5.
101 WRIF.
Yes.
make your request.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the Fubar.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
On the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIS.
Riff.
Rock.
Twice.
Today is nice.
W for Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIS,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you 2 for Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Two for Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff Prizes.
Learn it, know it, live it.
Two for Tuesday on the Riff.
From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
It really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's on the Riff.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Over the last 5 or 6 years, as you know, we're in the midst, some people suspect that we're in the midst of a housing bubble.
Well, I noticed you almost slipped out with the word inflated.
Almost.
Well, I mean, I bought my house so long ago, it was only $38,000. It's worth, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 times that now. Is that an inflated price?
It's hard to say, but, I mean, one thing that people are doing in response to these rising costs in the economy, they're using their credit cards to bridge the difference between income and expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And now that the interest rates have gone down considerably, it's become more attractive to shift over that debt, that what we call bad debt that doesn't end up in an asset, shifting that type of debt over into your mortgage, which is good debt, which when you finish paying off, you end up with an asset, your home. And so now folks are combining bad debt on their credit cards over into their mortgage. And in doing so, they're reducing the amount of equity that they built up in their homes over time.
Well, the whole question of debt, of course, a lot of us look forward to the day when we would have no debt. We wouldn't have any credit card debt. We'd own our own home. And yet the argument, including you hear that from the administration, that the fact that the nation now is a debtor nation isn't a bad thing. And some people say, well, it's not bad, operating in debt personally in the same manner.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, it's a serious problem, because the problem is that families are using debt to bridge the gap between income and expenses. The financial obligations ratio, which is put out by the Fed, it's the percentage of monthly income that you need to manage your monthly debts, has reached an all-time high of 18.5 in 2002, and that data has been collected since 1980. And so, just over the last few years, the amount of money we need just to service the amount of debt has gone up incredibly. And then related to that, the amount of homeowners' equity, the amount of home that we own, basically how much money we have sitting in our homes has declined over the last 30 years from nearly 70% in the early 70s all the way down to 55% in 2004.
You know, I found, when I read those figures, I found those disturbing, and I was wondering, both when I read them and also, Javier Silva, when you told us about that, whether the impact of that will sink in to listeners. I mean, if somebody's out there saying, so what? Because most of us feel that we'll probably be paying on housing all our lives, either rental or mortgage payments. What's the big deal?
Well, the problem is that when you own less of your home, and a large reason for that is because you're transferring this notion, this idea of bad debt into your mortgage, you're basically, first, you're jeopardizing your home, because if you miss a payment on your credit card, you're going to ruin your credit score. But if you miss a payment on your house, you're going to lose your house. And so when you're transferring this debt on this credit card debt, you know, the credit card debt is basically for housing, for health care, for groceries, for gas, and things like of that nature. And when you transfer the balances over to your home, you're basically securing these expenses with your home. Mm-hmm. And that's very problematic, because I don't think anyone, if they really make the connections, would secure groceries that they bought last week with their home.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you to do this, and actually I was probably remiss in not giving your title at Demos, and that is Senior Associate in the Economic Opportunity Program.
Right.
And I'm always attracted to the raw figures, mm-hmm. the numbers, yet I think that in your report, A House of Cards, about debt and refinancing, that just some of these case studies, a family case study, is worth telling about. Maybe you could just relate to us the situation with Gary and Sylvia Brown that you have in your report.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is a very very a sad case study. Gary and Sylvia Brown, they're out from the Midwest. And they have three children who they put through college, and they use their home equity to do that. And in the process, Mr. Brown had an accident at work, and so he wasn't able to pay. He had to stop working, and so they had to use their credit cards to bridge the difference between the expenses and the income they have, the medical bills that they were getting, since Mr. Brown was not insured. And at the same time, Mrs. Brown had removed some equity from her home to start a small business, and it was just a combination of the kids in college, Mr. Brown getting injured, and then this business not doing very well, which has really put a strain on their mortgage, because they basically have emptied out all of the equity in their home, and they're at the point now where they cannot refinance any longer because they basically have no equity left in their home.
Mm-hmm. How does one go about finding Gary and Sylvia Brown, for instance? So that are they hard to find, or is this an unfortunate growing category?
Well, it's an unfortunate growing category. About half of all mortgages already have been refinanced, and a large number of those mortgages involve pulling out equity. And I'll just give you a statistic here from the report. Between 2001 and 2003, $333 billion worth of equity was pulled out of homes.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, it was over $100 billion. And in 2005, it's estimated to be, projections are about $85 billion. And a lot of this money was used to pay down credit card debts and to cover current living expenses.
Let me understand. Make sure that we're all thinking the same things as we address this problem. If a house is worth $200,000 and I owe $100,000 on it, and I have a credit card debt of $50,000, then I borrow $150,000 on it. Is that right? Or am I not making any sense?
Well, let's see. Well, let's
you go, give the example.
Yeah, let's go with that example. So your home is valued at $200,000.
Yeah.
You owe $100,000. That means the difference between what you owe and what the house is worth is your equity that you've built up.
Right.
So you have $100,000 of equity. Now, when you refinance your mortgage, you're going to pull out some of that equity to pay off your $50,000 of credit card debt. So now the new mortgage is $150,000, and the house is valued at $200,000. So now of the $150,000 that you owe on the mortgage, $100,000 of it is actual debt for the house, and then $50,000 of it is actual debt that you transferred over, or bad debt,
mm-hmm.
that you now transferred into your mortgage. And now, let's say you have some kind of difficulty, whether it's a job layoff, divorce, or medical issues, which are the leading causes of bankruptcy, by the way. You're not able to make a payment. Now you put your house in jeopardy because you've transferred over a lot of credit card debt into your mortgage, and you refinanced, and so your options are less now when you do that. And if you're running into difficulty, you're jeopardizing your home.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, I mean, there's no problem with, for instance, that my wife and I were paying 6.25%, mm-hmm. and then we refinanced about 3 or 4 years ago to like 4.25%. So mm-hmm. but didn't take any money out of it. So that there's no problem with that.
No, and you didn't take any money out, and no, that's fine because you've actually lowered your monthly payment, but you didn't see the key here is not rolling bad debt into your home or pulling out money for things that don't appreciate. I mean, because that money should be thought of as your nest egg. And so mm-hmm. you didn't touch your nest egg, and you actually lowered the amount of interest that you need to pay every month.
My guest is Javier Silva, and he is a senior associate in the Economic Opportunity Program at Demos. And their website, if I can quickly get it, is Demos, DEMOS-USA.org. I'll have that on my website, PeterWerby.com. This is not a society that's high either on the family values that politicians use nor on compassion. And mostly people think, well, if people get themselves in a financial jam, even if, as you said, there was layoffs or illness or divorce or something like that, they should have been a little smarter and planned for it. Ultimately, it all falls down on each one of us. And if we're not smart enough to, not overspend, maybe you shouldn't have sent all 3 kids to college in the case of the Browns or something like that. It just is under the category of too bad.
Well, you know, that's certainly part of the story, but the other part that we can't ignore is the role of the finance industry, specifically the credit card industry. And let me look at quickly the credit card industry, and then I'll look at the mortgage industry.
Sure.
Because there are two things here that where things are stacked against the consumer. In the credit card industry, for example, there's been the industry has been deregulated, so now you have instances where interest rates can go as high as the roof, and you have rates that vary from 15% to 18% to 29%. We've even had a case study who received an offer for 45% rate of interest on their credit card. Obviously, they didn't take it.
Do they have guys that come out and break your legs if you don't pay? I mean, that's what it sounds like, a loan from the mob.
Right. I think these terms would make mobsters jealous because they can legally charge you these rates. And then the other thing is that penalty fees are unregulated. So you can have penalty fees which now have gone from $10 to $15 before deregulation that are $30 to $40. And I've seen rates as high, late payment fees as high as $49. And now let me get back to the late payment because many people will say, well, just pay your bill on time and you won't have to worry about it. Well, if it were only that easy, it's legal today. And if you read your statement, I would encourage all the listeners to look at the back of their credit card statement. You will see that the payment is due on the day that the payment is due. There's a time set. So if your payment arrives on that day, let's say, for example, your payment is due January 30th. If your payment arrives on January 30th, but after their cutoff time, your payment is late. And in the industry, the normal time is between 1 and 2 in the afternoon. And that doesn't seem fair. And so even if you get your payment on time on the day it's due, you could still trigger a late fee. And with that late fee, they'll also raise your rates. And once those rates go up, they're already high, so they're going from high to higher. There isn't a uniform code that says, if you pay on time for 6 months, your rate will go back down. You call your credit card company, and you have no idea what you need to do to get your rate back down.
Well, let's introduce, as you do, as a solution to this problem, the concept of usury. It's not really a common term any longer, although the Catholic Church 800 or 900 years ago forbid it. And actually, what you have here, I mean, this is me talking, and these are the terms I often speak. And it's really an obscene spectacle because you have the wealthy loaning money to the classes below them at a usurious rate.
Right,
is what it essentially comes down to. Mm-hmm. So tell us what usury is, and about one of the solutions you're suggesting about a national, actually anti-usury law, right?
Right, and actually, usury has been around quite a bit. You're quite accurate, but we had great usury laws on the books in this country up until about 30 years ago, which in the mid 70s there was a case that struck down the ability of states to limit interest rates. So many states across the country have limits on interest rates, but because of federal preemption, a case called Marquette versus Citibank, banks can charge whatever rate they are based in. And so if you look at your credit card statements, you'll see that most banks are based in South Dakota or Delaware, because these states have no limits on the rates that can be charged. And so banks that are based in these two states can export those limits, and that's what the Supreme Court case ruling effectively did, was nullify all of these state usury laws.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get a little to mortgage lenders as well, because on the face of it, it sometimes seemed to me to be a good idea that some people that I know, people just sort of blithely say, oh, I'm maxed out on my credit cards, no less, not just a single card. And when they tell me the figures, I mean, I'm just shocked. And I realize, just as you said, that people are doing this to maintain the lifestyle that that either they want or they think is expected of them by the community or their families, and so that there is on one level an element of personal responsibility, but then also do we take advantage of people that make mistakes? That's I think one question.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the credit card industry is really taking advantage of a lot of consumers who are not as well as informed as they should be. For example, with this issue of the late payments and the rates, and also not consumers not really understanding if they make minimum payments, how long will it take to pay off the balance? In some cases, if you make minimum payments, you could be paying off a balance of a couple thousand dollars as long as 30 years, 25 years.
Yeah.
It's quite long.
Some people say, I've had people tell me, well, you know, I'm going to be paying $1,000 a month minimum payment on my credit card for the rest of my life. they always seem to laugh after saying it. But, there is, I think, some personal responsibility that people ought to, if you're in an economy that doesn't give the kind of support that's present in other societies, you do have some responsibility, I would think, to make sure you don't get yourself in these bad situations. On the other hand, so much of this so-called recovery that hasn't gone too much farther than the stock market, I would say that if everyone consumed at the level of my wife and I, that there'd probably be a recession. In other words, right, this economy is in a lot of ways fueled on debt, both in terms of the national debt and in terms of personal debt.
Right, and that's true. And I think that's part of the reason why Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan really downplays the rising financial obligations ratio. I believe they don't want to scare consumers into being fiscally responsible and not spending so much in terms of buying larger homes and things of that nature. But for a large segment of the population, they're really using credit cards to bridge the gap between their income mm-hmm. and their expenses.
Well, there's the national debt, there's a trade deficit, and also there's a savings deficit that you can't have it both ways. Obviously, if you're maintaining this lifestyle, making up the difference, as you just indicated, you certainly aren't saving anything.
Right, that's right. And actually, it's people are not saving, and they're actually the expenses are so high and so much more than their income that bankruptcies have gone up. Last year, in 2003, personal bankruptcies reached a record of 1.6 million. And in 2004, as soon as the fourth quarter comes out, they're on pace. 2004 is on pace to match that. So in 10 years, bankruptcy has doubled, because about 10 years ago, bankruptcy levels were about 800,000, and now they're at 1.6 million. And in terms of foreclosures, between 2000 and 2003, foreclosures climbed 45%.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we often think of foreclosures with the poor, or the working class, the working poor. Here in Michigan, if I'm correct, the county that I live in, Oakland, has the highest foreclosure rate, and it's overall a fairly wealthy county, although I'm sure I'm bringing the average down, whatever, that they have this high degree of foreclosures on what's called these McMansions, these people,
right.
You know, the... Well, I'm looking at the clock. We only have about 4 minutes left. I want to get to some of these solutions, because it's an incredible service to point out the problems. But you, in your study, are kind enough also to make some suggestions. One of them is to maintain existing bankruptcy laws for individuals in severe economic distress. Now, I thought that there had been a law passed at the insistence of Bush's pals in the banking industry to make bankruptcy harder.
Well, yeah, it's it hasn't passed yet. There's a proposal out there that would make bankruptcy harder. It would make it more difficult for people to have some debts discharged during bankruptcy proceedings. That hasn't passed yet, but there's a lot of support from the business community in Congress to get that passed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what about this laws? You say essentially just maintain the present laws.
Right, maintain the present laws.
And what about protecting Americans from appraisal fraud? That in fact that the things are inflating the value of the house. Wouldn't that work to the benefit of the homeowner? I'm not advocating fraud, but
right. Actually, no, because what ends up happening is you get. Well, let me first explain how it works.
Sure.
Basically, you have a lot during refinancing where you want to refinance your home. And pull out maybe perhaps some equity, like in the example we used, where the house is worth $200,000 and you have $100,000 of mortgage and $100,000 of equity. Now, in an appraisal fraud, you'll get the appraiser to put pressure on the appraiser to raise the value of the home to, say, $225,000. Now let's say, for example, because you want to pull out $100,000 of equity, by raising the value of the home falsely, you're able to do that because you're not able to borrow the full amount of the value of the home. Most banks won't do that when it's what's called the loan to value. And so by raising the price of the home, you're able to pull out more equity, but the value is on paper, it doesn't really exist. And so the problem with that is when you go to sell your home or refinance it and the bank uses their own appraiser, they're going to appraise the house at the true value.
Hmm.
And you might end up owing more on the mortgage than the house is worth.
Abby Silva, let me just ask you one final question. We only have about a minute. In the title of the news release, it said that all of this could spell disaster for millions of homeowners and fuel a housing bubble crisis. I mean, is it that severe? I mean, are we severely at risk of all this, do you think?
I think we are, because the Appraisal Institute in the survey of its members said that 7,000 of their members were pressured into providing false appraisals. And we know that the run-up in housing prices over the last couple of years has been great for a lot of homeowners, but now it's run up so fast that a lot of economists are wondering if there's an inflation going on. Mm-hmm. Are they rising more than they should? Because they've risen much, much faster than inflation. And also they would expect rental properties to rise as well, and they haven't really kept up.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. My guest has been Javier Silva, and he has authored the report called A House of Cards, Refinancing the American Dream. It's available at demos-usa, demos-usa.org. I'll also have a link to it from on my site as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riff's Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
January 2005, David Hall reporting late night.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only